Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 RadioRTE.ie. Now, getting older. Oh, I have your attention now. Something many of us don't like to think about, but if you're lucky, it is inevitable. It comes to us all. There's a lot of difficult questions and conversations to be had around the whole issue of growing old. And a leading geriatrician from the UK, Dr. Lucy Pollock, has written, I'd say, a brilliant book called The Book About Getting Older for People Who Don't Want to Talk About It. And Lucy is on the line now. How are you doing, Lucy?
I'm well, thank you, Ray.
Yeah, congratulations on the book. So you've worked.
I'm just so glad you like it. Yeah, Ray. That's very good news. Yes. Thank you.
How would you describe it? Is it a self-help book? Is it a manual, or how would you describe it?
It's a book of stories, and they're all stories that are based on real life people who are my patients and their families. And I hope what it does is explain some of the things that happen as we get older in a really positive way. So they're stories that explain the kind of situations people can face and acknowledge that lots of older people are leading very happy and fulfilled lives. But there are some problem areas. And what I've learned over about 20 years of being a geriatrician is that if we talk about these things, they get much, much better.
Okay. There is another underlying theme in the book, and that is that old age isn't what it used to be.
No, and we've been caught on the hop a bit by that, because Ireland is similar to the UK. Life expectancy has grown enormously. I look back 20 years ago when I was having children, the average woman at 65 could expect another 16 years. Now she can expect another 20 years. And so that's four added years of life, just while I feel as though I've been hanging out the wash. It's in an incredibly short space of time. And it's kind of caught us unawares, and we haven't worked out what to do with that increased life expectancy, how to make the most of it, how to build a society that makes the most of old age so we can really enjoy ourselves to the very end. And also, as individuals, what should we be doing to make sure that we go into old age in a great shape as possible, and also make some plans for what to do. There's an awful lot of books about staying young, and that can be your plan A, but to be honest, it doesn't work. You've got to, at some point, if you're lucky, you're going to get old, and it's a good idea to have a think about it.
And now, as well as a measure of life expectancy, which is somewhere in the 80s, there's also another measure now. What is it called? Healthy life expectancy?
Yeah. Right. And that's a really interesting one, because we're adding years to life at the moment. And but the problem is that we may not be adding healthy years to life. Okay. And that's really what everybody wants. So, you know, people want to go on living really well. People are keen to be independent, live in their own homes, be able to control their own lives. And there is a little hint in the data that suggests that that may not be happening. We may be adding years that aren't of the greatest quality. So that's a really big challenge.
Yeah, because I suppose everyone thought that's the best thing to do, keep people alive for as long as possible. That seemed, nobody was going to stand up and say, that's not a good idea.
Yeah. And to be honest, that's one of the big questions in the book, is how do you talk about the fact that, you know, lots of people are very happy being alive, are having a great time, and they would like lots of treatment and so on. And we talk about what kind of treatments people can have. You know, is it a good idea to have a pacemaker when you're 92, like my patient Ellen, who's had a couple of falls? And the answer is yes, she's fantastic. She's still gardening. She grows her vegetables for her soup. And having a pacemaker is going to stop her having blackouts. So the message there is, do seek help. There are things that can be done. But then there's also a point where we need to have a conversation about quality as well as quantity of life. And we're beginning to realize that modern medicine offers so much, and then sometimes it's not what you want. So how do you have that conversation about saying, steady on, can we just have a think about whether I should be taking all these tablets? Do I want this operation? Should I be having chemotherapy with all the problems that that can bring? Or actually, would I rather have a slightly shorter life but more quality? And these are big conversations.
Oh, they're huge conversations, and ethical conversations as well. And everybody seems to be shying away from them, and that's why your book is such a brilliant book, because if nothing else, it's going to start conversations.
I hope so. And I hope that what I've done, Ray, is write a book that people can read. It's not a frightening book. I hope it's a comforting book, and it's kind, and there are bits that would make you laugh, but it is honest. And what I've been wanted to do for the last 20 years, really, is write a book that helps people find the words for these conversations. Okay. Because what I see over and over again is that if you talk about these things, A, there's loads of practical things you can do, there's help you can get, but also for a family, you just watch the weight lift off their shoulders. And you don't have to dwell on it. You don't have to talk about it every day. That would be a really gloomy subject. But what happens if you have a conversation about your future plans once, you can put it to bed and then you can go on, you know, okay, have your fish and chips and enjoy life again.
So you deal with, you mentioned falling already. And it's a thing that people associate with old age. And we talk about frailty and we talk about a knock to somebody's confidence as well as to their health.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the reasons that, well, falls are very common, but they're not normal. And that's one of the things I wanted to explain in the book. A lot of people are not sure about what is normal in old age. What should you just expect? You know, when you get out in the morning, of bed in the morning, is it normal for everything to creak a little bit? You know, what kind of memory loss? You know, I get to the top of the stairs and I think, what am I doing here? What did I come up here for? And I know I'm not going to remember until I go back downstairs again. Is that normal? Or is that something that is common but not actually normal? So there's things like falling over, there's things like that are embarrassing to talk about, like continence,
yes,
that people don't want to talk about, but actually it's a really good idea too, because quite a lot of things that happen to people as they get older are very common, but they're not normal, and it's a good idea to seek some help.
Right. And you cite a lot of studies in the book, which is brilliant. You've done the reading, so we don't have to. And for example, in falling, where they actually paid more than just your average attention to a patient, the outcomes were brilliant.
Yes, exactly that. And it's not, you know, it's not amazing science. I mean, these are very impressive studies, because to get them published and get them done is amazing. And the researchers that have done it are fantastic. But actually, this is often about really simple things. The first thing is listening really carefully to somebody who has had a fall to find out why it happened. Because we know that if we do some interventions, we can reduce the risk of falling by a third. And that's a lot. That really makes a difference to people's quality of life. So, yeah, the book has some science in it, but I hope it explains it in a way that makes what I've tried to do is describe good care. Yeah. And say, this is what you should hope for. This is what you should expect. This is what makes a difference. This is what to go looking for.
Mm. And dementia, of course, is a huge part of growing old. I'm just looking at statistics from Ireland. The number of people with dementia is going to double in the next 20 years. And that's a result of us staying alive longer.
It's a really big one, isn't it? Because it's what most, you know, people really fear that because of the loss of independence. So again, it's about keeping a balance, about remembering that people with dementia can be, again, living very happy and fulfilled lives. They can be part of loving families. They can be entertaining. They can be entertained. And dementia is a really big spectrum as well. Lots of people with early stages are living very active lives. And there's questions about driving. Should you still be allowed to drive? Things like that. And then there is also facing up to the fact that dementia can be very difficult. So I talk about Brian and Margaret in the book and her journey towards a diagnosis, because to be honest, he's so sweet and kind and they've been married for years and years, and she starts getting forgetful, but he takes over things just quietly. He does the shopping list and he does the shopping, and in the end he's pretty well doing everything around the house that she used to do, and they kind of know there's a problem, but they don't want to say it. So this question is, you know, is it a good idea to say it? Why have we got shame about dementia? That's a shocking thing. We should not have any shame about this illness. People with the illness affected by it, you know, making it feel something shameful is so wrong. So having a good conversation about it is a very good thing. And then I talk about what do you do when things get tricky. And, you know, my patient Clem, who just is having such a terrible time, and his poor wife, they're in a really difficult situation, and we talk about what can be done to make that better.
Is that Nancy and Clem, is it?
Yes.
Yes, because, and I know these aren't real people, but what you've done is taken all your experience and sort of created these people to tell stories that you've lived through. And Nancy says, when you meet her at one stage, she puts her head in her hands and she says, "I long for him to die."
And it's such a sad moment.
Yeah.
And she so desperately needs to be it. She's never said that to anybody. She loves him with a passion. They have been married for more than 60 years. She knows him backwards. And yet the man he has become is not the man he was. And it's so sad for her. And she knows he's suffering as well, because dementia can make the person with dementia suffer as well. So there is, you know, people want to be positive about dementia, which is great, but we also have to accept that in some circumstances, somebody's life can be really very difficult. And for her to be able to say that and me be able to listen and say, do you know, Nancy, that's fine. Okay. It's all right. That's very important.
So it makes complete sense that you, as a geriatrician, have thought about how you want to be treated in old age. And as a woman in your...
I'm 55, Ray. 55. I look around and think, how did I get to be 55? This is ridiculous.
But you've already put together an advanced directive. Is it? What do they call them? There are various names for them.
And this is where we get confused as well. And we get muddled up about what's the law, what are the ethics, and so on. And so I explain the UK situation quite carefully, but there are very similar arrangements in Ireland. What I have made is a thing called an advanced decision to refuse treatment, which is about certain treatments, which is about if something awful happened, if I was in a car accident or, you know, fell off a ladder and had a terrible head injury that I was never going to recover from, I've made some decisions about what kind of treatment I would and wouldn't want to have. And I've done that because I do not want my family to have to make those decisions on my behalf. I don't want them to have the uncertainty. But that's not right for everybody. And, you know, there are lots of people who would not want to make that kind of plan. But there is also a similar, more informal arrangement that people can do as they get older, called an advanced care plan. And that is a really useful thing to do. To be honest, just talking about it with your family, that's the most important thing. Putting it in paper is fantastic. But if you can just talk about it, have a think about what your wishes are, what your hopes are, what your fears are, have a chat to your family about that, then if you're in trouble, they can speak for you.
I see, for example, we've chatted about this before on the show, the Irish Hospice Foundation have a thing that you can print off, think ahead, speak for yourself, and it's all about that.
That's fantastic. And, you know, the provision of that is quite patchy, and where you record it and making sure that the right people can see it when the time comes, you know, making sure that the hospital knows about it, that your GP, the ambulance service and so on, that's a bit of a challenge. But we're getting there, and the more people talk about it, the more it becomes completely normal. And then it kind of loses some of its fear as well. Yeah. So, and as I say, they're not things you have to think about every day. It would be awful to wake up and think, oh, I've got to talk about that again. Mm. That would be bad. But if you just do it once, it makes a difference.
And you say in the book that this is different from a do not resuscitate instruction.
Yes.
This is different.
Exactly. And it can be part of it, but separate.
Okay. Assisted dying, you outline your opinion on that, and you say the discussions around assisted dying, which you've had in the UK and we've had here in Ireland, has distracted us from discussions around unassisted dying. And that's basically a lot about what we're talking about today, is unassisted dying. So we need to have bigger conversations about that.
Exactly, because most people reach the end of their life, and what most people want is a peaceful death, obviously, in the place that they feel safe and they don't want to be in pain and so on. Now, the problem that can arise for some people is that we don't quite know how much medical treatment to give somebody. So medical decisions are often less clear-cut than somebody would think. So I talk about a very, very frail man in the book and his lovely family. He's got a son and a daughter, and we're doing things to him. He's in hospital for months and months on and off. You know, he goes home, comes back in again. He's been in a care home, he comes back in again. He's got loads of medical problems. He can't speak for himself. We're doing blood tests on him every day. We're trying to persuade him to take different tablets, including ones that don't make him feel better. They're just there to try and make him live longer. And there's a really big question about what does he actually want? What if he could, because his family's never spoken about it. And they're like lots of people. They look at me and they say, you know, well, you don't talk about these things, do you? And you don't. And they're poor people. They're thinking, well, what is right? And they also, there's this secret feeling that they don't think they should say anything because the doctor might think they don't love their dad.
Yes.
Oh, my Lord, they love him to pieces. They want what's right for him. And we need to be able to listen to them, let them speak.
Yeah, it's messy. You know, and I think that's, old age is messy. Life is messy.
That's a good message as well, Wade. To be honest, it sounds as though the book's terribly gloomy. It's not. It does talk lots about the joy that we can have in life and what makes things fun. And, you know, the fact that a little of what you fancy does you good, yes, as you get older. And, you know, something about throwing caution to the wind some of the time. You know, what do you do about somebody who is, as they always say, fiercely independent? All, you know, the smaller the old lady is, the more likely she's going to be described as fiercely independent.
Yeah.
You know, and when do you intervene and when do you stand back and say, actually, do you know what you're doing is completely nuts, but I love you for it. And I love the fact that you're going to go on climbing the stairs when really you should have a stair lift, or that you're going to go and walk by the river when we're all worried that you might tumble in one day. You know, people do have to be allowed to make their own unwise decisions. So we talk about that as well.
And I can hear in every page in the book that you're an advocate for older people, and you're an antenna up when it comes to ageism, which there's a lot of. And you say that we need to put moral pressure on people to take care for their older relatives the same way as they take care for the youngest of their relatives.
Well, I think what can happen is there's a danger that you get a kind of competition, that there's a view that you give to older people and that means you might be taking away resources from younger people. And what the real message is that we're all in this together, and actually all the things that are good for older people are good for young people too. So, you know, decent housing that's warm and the bills aren't too big, that's fantastic for a young family on a limited income. Public transport that works and that you can get on and off and it's reliable and it turns up and it's not too expensive, and you can get on it if you're using a walking stick or if you've got a buggy with a child and a baby. You know, that's really good. Having safe open spaces to be in, to you know, parks that you can walk in, fantastic for older people and fantastic for younger people. So really this is about sharing things in our society, and also recognising that if you lock people away, older people aren't different. They are just the rest of us grown up.
Okay. There's a big philosophical chat, isn't there, about medicine? Because,
yeah,
and how you're trained and how your colleagues are trained. And it is to keep us alive. Keep us alive at all costs. And
yeah,
that's your training, isn't it?
It is.
When I say you, I mean the medical profession, need to learn differently and think differently.
So what we need to do is listen to our patients. And this is why we need these conversations. What do people actually want? There is no, in the UK, no legal requirement. You start from a presumption of prolongation of life, but there isn't a legal requirement to do that, regardless of the consequences for the patient, if you know what those are or you can find them out. And all over the country, all the time, there are older people and people of any age saying, you know, I'm not going to have that. I'd rather not do that particular treatment. And this is all about sharing those decisions. So instead of the doctor being God, which is what used to happen 40 odd years ago, thank goodness we've moved on to this shared decision making, where we should be, and you have to have time and you have to have good communication skills, because some of these things are really complicated. I mean, we don't know what's right as doctors some of the time. Sharing that uncertainty is a really important thing to do without undermining somebody's confidence. So it's sitting down together, giving ourselves time, allowing those big subjects to come up, and then making plans. And, you know, it's moving, Ray, definitely.
Okay.
And there are so many people that are involved in this now, and they've really got the right idea.
Okay. Just before we let you go then, this final question, because people, and I would be one, I'd say, I don't know if I want to live to 100. And whenever I say that, people come back at me via text or if I'm in a conversation and they say, I'll come back to you when you're 99.
Exactly. And you've hit on a really important thing here. Younger people judge the quality of life of older people wrong.
Okay.
We look at older people and we think, oh, I wouldn't want to live like that. If you ask the older people themselves, they will often judge their quality of life much higher. And we all change through life. You know, I like watching, you know, the pottery throwdown and antiques roadshow. You know, that wasn't my choice of programme, or wouldn't have been, you know, 20, 30 years ago. We all change and our expectations change, and things that make us happy happy when we're 20 are different. Mm. Well, some of them are different. Some of them are the same. You know, there are shared pleasures in every generation as well.
Yeah, so it's, yeah. Well, you know, and we know all the statistics about we're an ageing population. There's going to be a lot more of us older. So we're going to be having these chats over and over again. Anyway, your book is a very good starting point. The book about getting older for people who don't want to talk about it, Dr. Lucy Pollock, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.